After receiving the information from the Russian ambassador and reviewing it along with all other information available, Christian went on, the president asked Secretary of State Dean Rusk to call in Ambassador Dobrynin tonight to discuss the matter further. Christian would not give the exact time the president learned of the reported difficulties in Czechoslovakia, but he said it was while Secretary of State Dean Rusk was testifying tonight before the Democratic platform hearings here in Washington. According to Christian, those present at the meeting tonight at the White House, besides the president, were Vice President Humphrey, Secretary of State Dean Rusk, Secretary of Defense Clark Clifford, CIA Director Richard Helms, Director of the USIA Leonard Marks, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Earl Wheeler, and Presidential Advisor Walt Rostow. Christian refused to elaborate on the meeting, but he said it lasted just a little under an hour and gave a firm no to reporters when asked if the hotline to Moscow had been used. Mariah McLaughlin, CBS News at the White House.
Travel from Czechoslovakia to the West has been barred as of several hours ago, according to the Austrian Interior Ministry in a dispatch from Vienna. It also added that starting on Tuesday midnight, travel to Hungary from Austria was also banned. An official of the Interior Ministry in Austria went on to say that tanks were blocking the bridge at Bratislava in eastern Czechoslovakia. He said he was told by Austrian travelers still allowed to pass the Czechoslovak checkpoint that tank soldiers ordered them to go back to Austria. Shortly later, travel was also blocked at the checkpoint, according to that word from Vienna. Secretary of State Rusk was called away from an evening session of the Democratic Platform Committee, which was hearing testimony in Washington when news of the Czech invasion broke. CBS News correspondent Roger Mudd covered that meeting and now reports from the Capitol.
This was to have been the highlight of the Democratic Platform hearings. The Peace Democrats had succeeded in getting Chairman Hale Boggs to schedule a night session of the committee to take additional testimony on Vietnam. Without effort and almost with no delay, Boggs announced that Secretary of State Dean Rusk, who avoided testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Vietnam for more than 2 years, would be one of the witnesses. The Hawks were delighted because they thought Rusk would bolster their argument against a peace plank. The Doves were delighted because they seemed convinced Rusk would fall into a trap and damage the administration's argument. In any event, Secretary Rusk appeared in the hearing room at the stroke of 9 o'clock. The administration knew he was to be on live television. And the Peace Democrats, for instance, Sorensen of New York, Gilligan of Ohio, O'Donnell of Massachusetts, Burton of California, were ready for a vigorous cross-examination. Rusk was about to conclude. His speech was the expected one. The platform, he said, should not outline tactics or strategy for Vietnam, but should state objectives. And that objective, he concluded, was an early but honorable peace.
That is said in strong and simple terms, the nation's interest will be well served. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Just then, a State Department aide slipped Rusk a decoded message, apparently from the U.S. Embassy in Prague.
Mr. Chairman, California
Chairman,
seeks
Ohio
recognition.
Utah seeks
Mr.
recognition.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I believe I was on my feet first. With all due deference to our distinguished Secretary of State, Mr. Chairman,
we have here a bulletin that has just been handed to me, and I think just handed to him. Associated Press bulletin from... We have here a bulletin which has just been handed to me by the press from Czechoslovakia, saying that Radio Prague announced Wednesday that Soviet troops have crossed the Czechoslovak borders. Broadcast asked Czechoslovak citizens not to take any action against them. The broadcast came at 2 a.m. over the direct network of Radio Prague. unusual activity at the airport would justify it as apparently landing. Secretary says that I'm sure he's not trying to leave, but that he does have a problem here.
I had not expected, Mr. Chairman, when I came that I would be leaving early, but I think that I'll have to go and see what this is all about. I'm very sorry indeed, and I apologize to the platform committee.
Thank you very much.
So the secretary left the platform hearings to see what it was all about. He left immediately for the White House, where President Johnson had summoned that emergency session of the National Security Council. The platform session continued, but the doves had been denied their long-awaited opportunity to go after the administration's top witness on Vietnam. Serving on the platform committee is a member of the Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate, Claiborne Pell of Rhode Island, who recently was in Czechoslovakia. Pell was questioned tonight by CBS News correspondent David Shoemaker.
Pell, you were in Czechoslovakia very recently. I think it's been about a month. Could you tell us what you observed while you were there and if you had any hint that this was coming?
When I was there, freedom was bubbling. You could feel that the people were excited and for the first time tasting the things that we take for granted. And one had the feeling that if they stayed within the three perimeters of fidelity to the Warsaw Pact, the retention of the ownership of the means of production under the communist system, or socialism, and retaining the primacy of the Communist Party, that the Czechs would be able to move along and the Soviets would live, let them live and let live. The problem has been whether you can leave the genie of freedom half in the bottle once it's gotten out a bit. And what is apparently happening tonight, and it's too early really to make an intelligent comment, is that the Soviets are trying to put the genie of freedom back in the bottle. Only tomorrow and the days after will show what the exact results of this step will be.
Well, the Czech government and the Communist Party have both asked the people of Czechoslovakia not to resist. Would Czechoslovakia even have the capability of resisting something like this?
After the experience of Hungary, after the experience that any small country has, if a great country moves into it with all its force, it knows that resistance is unsuccessful. And I think that First Secretary Dubček gave the right advice to his people.
Senator, you're a member of the Foreign Relations Committee. Did you have any advance warning that this was going to occur tonight?
No. Many of us who followed this Czechoslovak situation have been worried and wondering if they were going beyond these three perimeters of which I spoke. We felt, at least I speaking for myself, I felt they'd stayed within them. And for that reason, I am desolate at what is going on at this time.
What do you think will be the political impact of this, particularly on those who were, let's say, identified as peace forces within the Democratic Party?
Which definitely would be myself, for one. I think it will make our position more difficult, because when we see the Soviet troops with the iron hand moving in, restraining freedom, it makes the so-called forces of peace seem a little futile.
But to some members of the platform committee running as peace candidates, like John Gilligan of Ohio, the Democratic senatorial candidate, the domestic political implications of the Czech crisis were not clear. Gilligan, in a session with reporters after the news broke at the hearing room, said he thought it might help. He said it only proved that the enormous commitment and attention and preoccupation in Southeast Asia had blinded the United States to the rest of the world. But to Senator Wayne Morse of Oregon, the immediate response for the U.S., he said, should be to call the United Nations.
In foreign policy, I think we ought to be sure we know what the facts are before we start commenting upon the hypotheticals. But let's assume the hypothetical that the Polish and the Russian troops have moved in for whatever reason. I don't know. I think what we ought to be calling for is an immediate emergency meeting of the Security Council of the United Nations. Let's not start making another mistake again of unilateral or bilateral or independent actions on the part of military powers in regard to some problem that's arisen in the world. I say, as you've heard me say so many times, here is the time to see whether or not the United Nations Charter is worth the paper it's written on. We violated it in Vietnam. Russia, apparently, if the hypothetical is true, is violating it in Czechoslovakia. Let's not make the same mistake again. Let's call for an extraordinary emergency meeting of the Security Council and try to get the facts out in the open.
Right.
One of the witnesses earlier this evening at the platform hearings was the former ambassador to India, John Kenneth Galbraith, under John Kennedy. Mr. Galbraith is now a professor at Harvard. Galbraith is one of the most literate and sometimes the most acerbic men in or out of public service, and tonight he laid into the administration's Vietnam policy. But after the news of the Czech crisis broke at the hearings, Galbraith's reaction was a very human one.
Oh, I wouldn't venture to say. I was reflecting on the thought that my 18-year-old son has just arrived there from Bulgaria, so he might be in a better position to comment than I am. Obviously, none of us knows, but I should suppose that the Poles and the Germans and the Soviets, all of whom seem to have acted, have become convinced that liberalization was going too far in Czechoslovakia. And this is a you know, something that nobody can condone, because our great hope was that this was the direction in which the communist world was going to evolve, and of course it will continue to evolve. The Czechs, no more than the Hungarians, can be kept indefinitely under control.
Well, Senator Moore suggested tonight that the United States do nothing unilaterally, that it see that this issue goes to the United Nations. Does that seem to be a safe course at this point?
I don't know how much the United Nations, what its jurisdiction is as a technical matter, because I suppose the Czechs would have to ask for the meeting, wouldn't they? But, this is beyond the range of American unilateral action. There's no step that we can take beyond conversation.
Well, now, you mentioned that it was a setback for those of you who had seen growing signs of detente between the Soviet Union and the United States. Does this mean also a political setback for people like Senator McCarthy and George McGovern?
Well, I wouldn't think so, no. McGovern, McCarthy, have all been arguing that there are limits to the use of American power, and this in some ways affirms the point. We've all been arguing also that, as I said in my testimony tonight, that the communist world is not the monolithic thing that Secretary Rusk so long envisaged it as being, but a concatenation of warring factions. And this, of course, is a further indication of that fact. There'll be nobody on our side of the fence who will have the slightest sympathy for what the Soviets have done. There is it will be exploited by the hawks and the people who like tension in the world, no question.
And you can sympathize, of course, this evening with the feelings of the Czechoslovakian ambassador to Washington, who first heard the news that his homeland was being invaded as he watched domestic American television.
CBS News correspondent Roger Mudd reporting from Washington. We have a late bulletin from Warsaw, Poland, from Reuters, the British news agency. They report that planes roared continuously over Prague early this morning. That would be Wednesday morning, New York time, apparently landing in the vicinity of the capital. Their information from a local Czech citizen who was reached by telephone. At the United Nations, a spokesman for Secretary General U Thant says there are no immediate plans to bring the Czech question before the Security Council, and that Secretary Thant is still planning to leave New York on Thursday to visit Czechoslovakia, where he is scheduled to receive an honorary degree a few days from now. That statement was issued about an hour and a half ago, and it seems as if those plans may possibly be changed by the latest developments. CBS News United Nations correspondent Richard C. Hottlett is standing by at his home in Connecticut. Dick, in your opinion, what are the possibilities of the Czech invasion question being brought before the United Nations?
Gary, any threat to the peace or any breach of the peace naturally comes under the jurisdiction of the United Nations Security Council, because under the UN Charter, it is the organ primarily responsible for keeping the peace. But the council doesn't meet automatically. A matter must be brought to it. And right now, everyone concerned, apparently even the Czech mission to the UN, is waiting to see what precisely is happening in Prague and what the legal coloration it will have. That is to say, if Dubček, of whom one hasn't heard yet this evening personally, if Dubček were to welcome the Russians, if he were hypothetically to say, well, we've got into trouble and over our depth with counter-revolutionary elements in Prague, and please come in and help us out. That would make it an internal affair between the Czech government and the Soviet government, and it would not be nominally and legally a threat to peace. However, if the Czechs were to come to the council and say, we have been invaded, we have foreign troops here who have taken over our sovereignty, and please do something about it, the Security Council would at once meet. That has not happened. If the Czechs, for internal reasons, do not make any such request, then any other member of the United Nations could make it. The United States could make it on the basis of whatever deliberations were completed in the National Security Council in Washington this evening. Or, perhaps more likely, one of the European countries, which are closer to the scene than the United States, Britain or Denmark, who are members of the Security Council, might make such a request, and it would be almost immediately honored. Barring that, Outhant himself, under one of the paragraphs of the one of the articles of the UN Charter, could originate action. Dag Hammarskjöld did that when the Congo crisis broke in July of 1960. He had the power, and he does have the power under the Charter, to summon the Council to take action. The only clue one has so far as to the mood in Czechoslovakia and what the Czech government might do is the statement by the Central Committee of the Czechoslovak Communist Party that the entry of foreign troops into their country is contrary to principles of international law and also contrary to principles of that govern relations between socialist states. So it is possible that the Security Council may be brought in, but it has got to be brought in. It can't itself step in.
Dick, let me break in here just for a moment. We've just received a bulletin that the Soviet news agency, TASS, said tonight that the Czechoslovak government and the Communist Party leaders there had asked the Soviet Union for urgent assistance against what they call the threat which has arisen to the socialist system. Does that sound to you like Soviet propaganda or an urgent plea?
That is, of course, what Moscow would say. That is undoubtedly what Dobrynin had told President Johnson this evening. The question is, and the decisive question is, will the Czechs go along with that? And with Soviet troops in Prague and with the troops of the other hardline communist countries in control of the whole country, they are under some very serious pressure. It is not at all impossible still, however, that one of the leaders might flee the country or go to the radio station and call for help, although there the example of Hungary in 1956, I think, is one to sober up even the most burning patriotism. There is no question whatever that the Soviets mean business down to the point of using weapons, of using force and arms, just as they did in Hungary in 1956. It has been talked about very seriously in diplomatic quarters at the United Nations over the past few weeks. I think the timing of this intervention will have taken everyone by surprise. It had been thought that the Soviets would resort to a longer, drawn-out and more subtle pressure, economic and political and psychological, over a fairly long period, to bring the Czechs back into line. But that the Soviet Union intended to bring the Czechs back into line and to snuff out the trend toward liberalism which had become apparent over the last 9 months, that was not in question at all. The Cerna and Bratislava agreements, you see, had two parts. One was the solidarity of the socialist states, so-called, and the other was the right, technically, or for each of these states to go its own way. The Czechs put all the emphasis on the second point. The Soviet Union and the hardliners put all the emphasis on the first point. And the Soviet and the hardline point of view was spelled out most formally and solemnly at the meeting in Warsaw last month on the 14th of July, where they said that the developments in Czechoslovakia were liquidating the socialist system, that the liquidation of the socialist system in that country was a threat to the alliance and therefore was also a threat to the safety of all the other countries in that alliance. And there was one dramatic passage in that in a letter that the five hardline countries sent to Czechoslovakia at that time, which I think underscores the seriousness of this situation, both in terms of the determination of the Soviet Union to hold the line there and to its willingness to use ultimate force to have its way. The five countries writing to the Central Committee of the Czechoslovak Party from Warsaw said, "The frontiers of the socialist world have moved to the center of Europe, and we shall never agree to have these historical gains of socialism, independence, and security of our peoples being put to a threat. We shall never agree to have imperialism using ways, peaceful and non-peaceful, making a gap from the inside or from the outside in the socialist system and changing in imperialism's favor the correlation of forces in Europe." The Soviets see this, see the Czech threat, the Czech menace, because the dilution and the possible elimination of communist control in Czechoslovakia is to them a threat. They see this as a strategic threat to the whole balance of power in Europe. And they have been, and it was, as I say, it was spoken of quite openly and quite seriously in diplomatic circles. No one had the slightest doubt that they would apply all their force to rectifying what they thought would be a serious strategic loss.
Well, in other words, Dick Ottolett, this action, this invasion of Czechoslovakia came then as no surprise to diplomats at the United Nations.
Only as far as the timing was concerned, Gary. The story we got was that at Cherna and at Bratislava, the Soviet leaders who arrived there in great number, you remember, the top men at Cherna, the whole Politburo was present, told the Czechoslovak leaders, "Look, you have gone too far. You must regain control of all the media of public opinion. You have got to get the bourgeois elements and counter-revolutionary elements out of the press, out of radio and television. You must also revitalize the Communist Party in order to reestablish the full political authority of the Communist Party, that is the so-called democratic centralism, which means unquestioning obedience from the top group all the way down through a functioning organism. Because if you don't do that, communism, socialism as they put it, is likely to disappear. We don't care how you do that, whether you do it by changing the staffs of the party newspapers and the other newspapers in Slovakia and in Czechoslovakia and in the Czech Bohemia and Slovakia, or whether you do it by means of a revitalized party organization inside the radio the broadcasting networks and the papers, but you must do it. We were also told that the Soviet leaders did not, on these occasions, give the Czech liberal leaders any ultimatum. They didn't say, you must do it by next week or by 2 weeks from now. And the supposition based on that was that the Soviets would take their time. The Czech Communist Party Congress is due to start on September the 9th. And there would be a struggle there for between hardliners and liberals in Czechoslovakia to determine the nature and the coloration of the new Central Committee and, of course, the new Presidium. There would be, in the course of the next few months, as economic troubles are bound to increase in Czechoslovakia, there's bound to be unemployment, bound to be dislocation, shortages of goods, and it was thought that the euphoria which had gripped Czechoslovakia so easily in the springtime and the summer when the living is easy might be whittled away under the pressure of economic need and psychological intervention by the underground campaigns which had already become evident, leaflets passed around by the hardline remnants, the old supporters of Novotny, the Stalinist president who was removed earlier this year. One had thought that the orchestration of pressure would be employed and that the Soviets would take their time. Obviously, we now see they have decided that they couldn't wait, that they were, in fact, threatened with loss of control, and they have now intervened.
Well, Dick Ottolett, thank you very much for your thoughts and for your analysis and for chatting with us this evening.
Thank you, Gary.
We've received some further reports from overseas on the Czechoslovak invasion by Soviet and other communist bloc countries. Travelers from Czechoslovakia are now reporting that huge Soviet tank and troop movements are indeed underway into the country. They report Russian forces have taken control of Prague. Those reports have not yet been confirmed by Radio Prague. But there have been reports within the past several minutes that certain broadcasting stations inside Czechoslovakia have now been taken off the air, and that the complete network that is operated from the Czech capital in Prague is no longer in operation. One man reached by telephone by Reuters, the British news agency, claimed to have heard what he said sounded like vehicles rumbling through the streets. Radio Prague went silent sometime after announcing that troops of the Soviet Union and four other nations had crossed into Czechoslovakia several hours ago. Radio Bratislava, that was the town where the Soviet Union and other Eastern European countries met with Czech leaders a few weeks ago, that Bratislava radio played music, and a resident explained that information to Reuters, the British news agency. The caller claimed he was speaking from a suburb of the city, the north bank of the River Vltava, and he said that his area of the city was quiet, but that there was some sound of tanks rumbling in the distance. Radio Prague, in another dispatch, said that some of the transmitters were now off the air and that the message from the Czechoslovak Presidium might not be reaching the entire country. CBS News coverage of the invasion of Czechoslovakia will continue after a 65-second pause for station identification. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This is KNX 1070 News Radio in Los Angeles.
Mothers, it's first to Sears, then to school, because Sears has everything in school wear. And right now, you'll find tremendous values at Sears low prices. Listen to this. Sears easy-to-launder 100% cotton dresses for little girls are priced at three for only $6. That's correct. Now through Wednesday, you'll pay only $6 for three of these beautifully styled dresses. Sears has a huge selection of these ever-popular cottons that includes her favorite solid colors, the prettiest plaids, and most charming checks. All perfect for her back-to-school wardrobe. You'll find these dresses in Sears Infants and Children's Department, and they're available in little girl sizes 3 to 6X. Yes, Sears is where the values are, and you'll agree these wonderful cotton dresses are really great values at Sears' sensationally low price. They're three for just $6. But don't miss this opportunity to stock up at Sears Easy on the Budget prices. Sale ends Wednesday, so hurry. Charge your purchases on Sears Revolving Charge. All Sears stores are open till 9:30 p.m.
This is Gary Shepard, CBS News, New York, as CBS News coverage of the invasion of Czechoslovakia continues. Now here with the latest up-to-the-minute developments, CBS News correspondent Charles Kuralt.
The Soviet news agency TASS reports now that the Czechoslovak government and Communist Party leaders asked the Soviet Union for urgent assistance against what TASS called the threat which has arisen to the socialist system. But Prague Radio, in announcing the invasion of Czechoslovak territory, said the Soviet move came with no warning to the Czechoslovak government and was a violation of international law. The Prague broadcast, you know, announced that troops of the Soviet Union, Poland, East Germany, Hungary, and Bulgaria crossed the Czech frontiers and called on the population not to resist the advance of the Eastern European forces. In Vienna, Austrian border officials now are quoting Western travelers fleeing from Czechoslovakia, saying they saw great numbers of Soviet jet fighters landing at Prague's airport late on Tuesday night. And these same travelers report huge Soviet tank and troop movements into the country. There is a report from people coming out of Czechoslovakia that Russian forces have already taken control of Prague. In Washington, the Soviet ambassador, Dobrynin, personally went to the White House to inform President Johnson about Soviet troop movements, the lone note of caution demonstrated by the Soviet government tonight. News Secretary George Christian says that President Johnson called the National Security Council into emergency session on the basis of information given to him by Dobrynin. That meeting has been held. It is over. President Johnson instructed Secretary Rusk to meet with Dobrynin later tonight to discuss the matter further, and Bob Pierpoint in Washington tells us that that meeting has begun. In Britain, Prime Minister Wilson cut short his summer vacation to return to 10 Downing Street to deal with this crisis. In Austria, the Interior Ministry says travel to Czechoslovakia has been barred since early morning, though people are leaving the country. An official of the Austrian government says tanks are blocking the bridge at Bratislava. Bratislava is the city where the Czech government of Alexander Dubček thought it had won concessions from the Soviet Union just 2 weeks ago. The Austrian Foreign Ministry reports that Soviet tanks are moving into Czechoslovakia from Hungary. Here in New York, the police guard at the United Nations and at the Soviet, Polish, and Czechoslovak missions has been increased. And the Secretary General of the United Nations, U Thant, has said that there will be no UN meeting on this crisis for at least 12 hours.
Charles, standing by in London is CBS News reporter Bob Allison, who apparently was awakened when the news of the Czech invasion reached there. Bob, can you hear us here in New York? Well, apparently we've lost contact with Bob Allison. We'll try to reach him in just a few moments. We do have a dispatch from here in New York that says police have sent extra men to guard the United Nations missions of the Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia, and Poland. Police officials said as soon as the extra men were available, they were being sent to the Hungarian mission. They declined to say how many men were involved because of security reasons. And now standing by in London, CBS News reporter Bob Allison.
The Foreign Office here is trying to set up now an immediate meeting of cabinet ministers to discuss the Czechoslovakian crisis. Prime Minister Harold Wilson, who has been vacationing on the Scilly Isles just off the south coast of Britain, is on his way back now to Downing Street. According to the Foreign Ministry here, the Soviet ambassador to Britain delivered a note for Prime Minister Wilson this morning, shortly before communications between Britain and Moscow were cut. The British Post Office reports that all calls to Moscow are now subject to indefinite delay. They just are not answering the phone, one spokesman said. Contents of the Russian note to Prime Minister Wilson have not been reported. Bob Allison, CBS News, London.
Standing by in Washington is CBS News correspondent Eric Severide with some thoughts now on the invasion of Czechoslovakia.
The timing of this thing today in East Europe has probably been a general surprise in this capital, though a lot of people have had their fingers crossed in both the State Department and the Pentagon. But there's considerable evidence that this thing tonight was a surprise. We've had no news that our 7th Army in Germany has been placed on the alert at all. The Czech ambassador, whom Roger Mudder was just mentioning, has just returned to this capital city after a 3-week vacation. It apparently was a surprise to the Czech leaders from all we've heard from their radio. And maybe it was a last-minute decision by the Russians because 3 of their top leaders were just called back to Moscow from their own vacations just a bit ago. When Secretary Rusk left those platform hearings this evening, he said he had better go and find what this was all about. That is the whole effort here now. How big is this thing? How many troops? That makes a great difference in terms of trying to figure out the Russians' intention. Apparently no Hungarian troops in this, by the way. If there's any intention beyond sheer intimidation and pressure on the Czech government, this reformist regime, which the Russians think has gone too far, all that will give us some sign of it. There's no evidence, no reason at all to think that this is going to mean, at least so far, that this is going to mean war between the Czechs themselves and the invaders, or even that it would mean a short and bloody uprising between men in the streets and the Russian tanks, as happened in Hungary and back in 1956. That time, too, the Russian army had been in, then it was out, and then suddenly it was in again. At that time in 56, the Israeli-Egyptian war and the American general election gave a kind of psychological cover to what the Russians were doing in East Europe. It made it very difficult for people to focus their attention on that exclusively. And this thing now catches the United States on the eve of a very dramatic political convention, possibly on the eve of the death of the man who was president in 56. There doesn't seem to be any force in Europe that can or at least will do anything about resisting this. I suppose it's probable, it would be natural, that the West German troops and our own NATO troops there would be put on the alert. That might happen down in Yugoslavia. It comes at a time when there are a great many pressures for reducing our troops in Europe, at a time when the whole thrust of foreign policy generally has been toward finding ways of peaceful dealings, negotiations with the Soviet Union, rather than confrontation. That was the emphasis of Mr. Nixon himself at the Miami Convention, even an old warrior, cold warrior like him. It's going to give added force to those political leaders and groups here who think of communism itself as the world menace, not any particular part of it, who think the Cold War is by no means over. That was a line of thought expressed, incidentally, by General Eisenhower in his last message to that Miami Republican Convention. This could be a far more serious issue, depending on how it goes, between us and the Russians and even Vietnam. There we don't confront the Russians directly. We do confront them almost directly in Central Europe because of our NATO troop establishment and our treaties. So, of course, we have no treaty with Czechoslovakia itself. My colleague Bob Pierpoint has been at the White House tonight where the Security Council has been meeting. Robert, anything very late from there?
Well, Eric, we do have a report issued by the President's new secretary, George Christian, a short while ago. Christian called in reporters to issue this statement. He said the President convened the National Security Council at 10:15 to consider the situation in Czechoslovakia. He said that the President informed the NSC of a message on the subject that he had received from Soviet Ambassador Dobrynin earlier in the evening. Christian explained that Dobrynin actually came to the White House to talk to the President. After reviewing the situation tonight with the NSC, President Johnson asked the Secretary of State to call in Soviet Ambassador Dobrynin again and discuss the matter further, and we understand from Nelson Benton at the State Department that Secretary of State Rusk and Ambassador Dobrynin are now meeting there. That NSC meeting at the White House, which took place in the cabinet room, ended at about 11:10. It lasted just about an hour. Christian was not able to answer many questions, but he did say that the hotline to Moscow was not used. That is the teletype, not telephone, but teletype that was used during the Israeli-Arab War last year was not used. Eric, we have very little time, but I wonder if you have any thoughts on why Ambassador Dobrynin might have come to the White House.
Well, I could only assume that to give us some kind of assurances that they didn't intend a war, or at least something to dampen down feelings here so that we don't do anything rash, which we're not going to do anyway.
I would assume that if we get much more information in the next few hours, that possibly President Johnson will go on television and radio tomorrow to deplore the situation and to some extent to warn the Soviet Union and the rest of its Eastern European allies what this does to Soviet-American friendship, what remains of it.
And possibly to take this to the UN Security Council.
So here in Washington, we wait, Charles, and hope.
CBS News correspondents Robert Pierpoint and Eric Severide reporting from Washington. The nearest free world capital to Czechoslovakia is Vienna, Austria. Newsman Ernie Reed is standing by there and has the latest on the Czech invasion from that listening post.
The Russians have stunned this part of the world. At 1 o'clock this morning, Radio Prague made a short dramatic announcement that Russian soldiers and troops from their four hardline allies, Poland, Hungary, East Germany, and Bulgaria, are moving into Czechoslovakia against the will of the Czechoslovakian people. There are reports that Russian planes are now starting to land in Prague. Since the early announcement, Radio Prague has made no further mention of the invasion by foreign troops. Observers here in Vienna believe that Radio Prague has now been put under control of pro-Russian elements. Based on the 1 o'clock Radio Prague statement, it is believed the Russian-led soldiers began moving into the country shortly before midnight. Meanwhile, here in Austria, the government has called an emergency meeting. The borders, which are only a few miles away, are now being fortified. This is Ernie Reed in Vienna.
If you've just joined us, here are the latest developments. Soviet military forces, along with troops from East Germany, Poland, Hungary, and Bulgaria, have invaded Czechoslovakia. Radio Prague is now apparently off the air after having reported that the invasion was ordered without the knowledge of Czech leaders. The Czech people have been told not to resist. Travel and communications in and out of Czechoslovakia have been cut off. And this late report just in from Prague says Soviet tanks and armored cars have now surrounded the Czechoslovak Central Committee building in Prague after communist troops from five nations marched on Czechoslovakia several hours ago. CBS News coverage of the invasion of Czechoslovakia will continue throughout the morning as developments warrant. This is Gary Shepard, CBS News, New York.
This Met Alert report has come to you from CBS News. We now resume the regular program schedule on this CBS Radio Met Alert station.
This is the KNX Late Evening News, and this is Barry Road. It's 17 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock.